Good evening, America. Welcome to our First Right conference call for September 30th of 2019. My name is Johnny B., and these calls occur every Monday evening at 8 o'clock Central Time with post-discussion ongoing once the recording is closed. And recordings pertain to the progress and serve as an archival vault of this momentous action we've set out upon. And this archive can be found at ourfirstright.org. The room is open to discussion right now, as long as we keep our audience down and everybody stays respectful to the floor as they're speaking. We can operate in that mode. And if you need to mute out, you can press star 6 on your phone. The operator will announce that you've been muted. And if you want to come back into the call, you press star 6, and that will return you back into our call. Our First Right initiative is Real Americans' efforts to draw together a coalition of focused Americans, leading the way to restoring real American liberty and freedom under the perfected guidelines of the United States Constitution. This will be a very short-lived effort, as Our First Right will dissolve once the ratification of the original first article is complete. The first enforcement mechanism in the original 12 protections passed with the Bill of Rights. That first article calls for proportional representation and was the only subject that George Washington actually spoke to during the entirety of the state's convention, 1787. Hear now that first step toward our hard-earned collective freedoms intended to protect us from our servants. Article the First. After the first enumeration required by the first article of the Constitution, there shall be one representative for every 30,000, until the number shall amount to 100, after which the proportion shall be so regulated by Congress that there shall not be less than 100 representatives, nor less than one representative for every 40,000 persons, until the number of representatives shall amount to 200, after which the proportion shall be so regulated by Congress that there shall not be less than 200 representatives, nor more than one representative for every 50,000 persons. And that was the original intent, was to let it ebb and flow with our population as we increased or decreased, whatever the circumstances may be. Thank you all for attending. God bless you so much for being here and taking the initiative to stay focused into this mighty effort that we're working on. So I'll turn the call over to Dixie. And I believe she's got a guest she's interviewing tonight.
Thank you very much, Johnny B. I am Dixie Egan. I am sitting in tonight for Aaron Lee, our national director, and we're going to talk tonight to Eric Rangel, who most of you know. Eric grew up in Brooklyn, New York. He attended public schools there and then studied information systems at New York University. He worked on Wall Street, developing systems for bond trading, settlement, and financing. And when his job relocated to Delaware in 1994, he became involved in the community there through his synagogue, where he sang in the choir and played clarinet in the Klezmer Band. In 2002, Eric became an independent IT consultant with a contract in New York, which required him to travel the Jersey Turnpike every weekend and live in a hotel during the week. His political views, which had been molded by his liberal education, began to change as he listened to conservative talk radio on his long commute. Over time, he realized that liberal ideologies were incompatible with the hard work and lifestyle he was now living. So, moving to Pennsylvania, he bought a house in 2007 and volunteered for several political campaigns for conservative candidates, gaining experience with websites and social media for candidates. In 2009, he started producing a conservative podcast called Conservative View, discussing what he had learned and commenting on news stories. That lasted until 2010, when job changes again resulted in taking independent consulting assignments for several months. He now works full-time in the IT department of a company that develops treatments for rare blood cancers. His experience in IT across the financial, insurance, advertising, and healthcare industries gives him a broad perspective on technology applications. He first discovered America again in 2016 through Joyce Riley's Power Hour and has played multiple roles in America again as it evolved into tactical civics and Our First Right. and he will be a key technologist in creating OFR's new website. Welcome, Eric, and thank you for agreeing to talk to us tonight.
Yeah, thank you, Dixie. I'm happy to talk with everybody today.
Okay. So, Eric, you've worked for a lot of different companies in many different industries in your career, some as an employee and some as an independent consultant. What's the difference in those two ways of working, and what have you learned from those experiences?
Okay. Well, my first job, it was just like a continuation of college. So I was in my 20s, and I had idealistic views about corporations, executives, government, and the American dream. So it still felt like I was entitled to the basic needs in life that students usually take for granted, like housing, healthcare, spending money, and many possible lifestyle choices without serious risks or consequences. So that's the way corporate recruiters attracted talented college graduates. They appeal to their material desires. And this was the 90s, just beginning, so computers were just coming out, and they were coming into the workplace. And I knew how computers worked. I had one since I was 13 years old. And I could help people figure out how to use them and solve problems when the computers failed. So I was rewarded for that skill. So I started working at a company on Wall Street. And I remember seeing Bill Clinton speaking on Wall Street when he was running for office. And it was a nice time because I was able to walk to the World Trade Center, and they had concerts on the plaza for lunchtime. Now, in 1993, there was the World Trade Center bombing, and we were watching it on the TV in the office, and it felt just like a random event, and it seems like, okay, the police quickly dealt with it, and life went on. Mm-hmm. It didn't seem like there was any long-term problem with that. So, okay, so then my job relocated to Delaware, and my liberal attitude still continued. I liked the change of pace in Delaware, and then I connected with a community of young singles, and they planned social events. And then, my job continued. There were opportunities to learn new technologies, and it seemed very secure, but then the company merged. Mm-hmm. And then bad management decisions were made, and my position was eliminated. So at the time, companies were giving outplacement services, so I was able to get help. And but I had to dress up in a suit and go to Wilmington every day and research jobs and update my resume, and someone helped me practice my interviewing. So I was out of work for 9 months. Mm-hmm. And then a friend from my previous company was able to arrange a consulting contract in New York for me, but it was with a startup company. So I had to learn fast what that's about. So, as a consultant, I had to set an hourly rate that would cover all my living expenses and travel expenses. And since I was staying in an extended stay hotel, I had to figure out how much do I need. And right. Then I had to pay my own quarterly taxes, and I had to get my own health insurance because COBRA doesn't last forever.
Right.
Yeah. And then I had to submit invoices every month. And then I had to wait up to a month before I got paid.
Right.
So it's not guaranteed that you're going to get paid for your invoice on time. Yeah. So then I had to track my time and my mileage. I had to separate business expenses from personal expenses. And I had to get a business license and renew it. So that's extra costs. And essentially, I had to sell myself. It's like a package.
Right. Time to grow up, huh?
Yeah, it was a very competitive market, and there was offshore talent. You could get programmers in India for very low rates for whatever skills you wanted. So my life was I had to get a post office box in Delaware for my mail. So I would drive to Delaware on Friday nights, go get the mail, go home to my apartment, and take care of whatever I needed to do. And then Sunday afternoon, I would drive back to Jersey City, where I was staying in that hotel. And then I had to get my own health insurance plan, and all I was able to get was a high deductible plan. So it's good thing I didn't have any serious accidents.
Right.
But I was young. I was able to handle it. But, you know, it didn't feel like I had a real home, and my future was uncertain, and then that startup company failed, and I was back on the market. So my recruiter hooked me up with a company in Pennsylvania that did advertising market research. So I consulted with them for a year, and then they hired me as an employee. So that was nice. I felt secure again. But then after 5 years, they merged.
Mm-hmm.
And then everything changed again. So
right.
Once again, I had a struggle in the job market and sell my knowledge. So I went to breakfast meetings with other people who were out of work. And these were technology professionals. And some of them were a lot older, and they had valuable years of experience, but they were really having trouble competing with the younger people and offshore market. So I felt for them. And they had houses and families to support.
Great.
So, yeah. So I was able to get a contract through a friend to develop websites. One of them was for an insurance agent, and another one was for a sports memorabilia store. And to do those contracts, I needed help, so I hired a subcontractor at my own expense to help me with the user interface for the website, and then another person to help me test the software. But these projects were short-term. It was only a few months each.
Mm-hmm.
And then my recruiter kept helping me, and he helped me land my current position, and I've been there now for 8 years. But even that's not secure because management's always trying to save costs and they may outsource my position at any time. So basically all this life experience was very important for me. It taught me that money doesn't grow on trees and there are no guarantees in life and there are very serious risks if I don't manage my life carefully.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so yeah, that about covers it.
Okay, so you talked about your philosophy changing. You know, had quite an interesting evolution there from liberal indoctrination in the public schools in New York to a hardcore constitutional conservative. And I am interested in that talk radio connection. I can sort of imagine you listening to Rush Limbaugh or somebody like that on a long drive. What was your reaction to that coming from the other end of the political spectrum? You know, were you outraged? What made you keep listening?
Okay, so initially on my drive, I was listening to podcasts. I was very new at the time. So I was just downloading the podcast that I liked and just giving myself my own entertainment and education.
Mm-hmm.
But then one day I just got bored with that, and I was curious about what was on the radio. So I turned it on, and it was like New York 770, I heard Monica Crowley and some other, and over time some other radio hosts. There was like a Lionel. And then one of the, there was a Sunday when Monica was covering a protest against George Bush, and she was remarking how these liberal people were behaving really weird. Like it was they were all dressed up in costumes, and some of the signs had sexual innuendos, and it was about anger and hate for George Bush.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she pointed out how ridiculous it was, and it was nothing like the protests of the 60s and 70s. So she pointed out the real immaturity in these people. And something resonated with me because the words she was saying, it came from a place of real life and experience, and that's exactly what I was dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, I started listening to Michael Savage, and it was strange. I really tried to understand where he was coming from and what made him tick. Why was he saying all this? And I realized that it's his life experience.
Mm-hmm.
He had many jobs, and he did research, and yes, so it's, I then listened to others like Mark Levin and Glenn Beck. And then one day I heard about this crazy guy, Alex Jones, and he dared to challenge the story about 9/11. And that was interesting to me. Like, where's this guy coming from? How is that possible? So I listened to that. And the conspiracy theories actually made sense to me. And,
I know. It's almost scary, isn't it, when
yeah,
it starts making sense to you?
Yeah. So actually, yeah, things like Alex Jones and Glenn Beck, they gave me good material for my own podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So that started because one of my neighbors introduced me to a conservative internet radio network, and he said, there's a lot of people who listen to this. So I decided
mm-hmm.
to listen, and answered an email to I sent an email to one of the hosts, and they liked what I said, and they asked me if I wanted to do a podcast, so I decided to try it. So I did a 40-minute show, and I talked about Animal Farm,
mm-hmm.
and they liked it, and I became part of their network. And so the idea I had for Conservative View was to make it like a Schoolhouse Rock.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so like it would be entertainment, but a little commentary like on what I heard on the talk radio and news stories, and try to help people understand what conservatism is about, because I was totally new to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it lasted for 35 episodes. Yep.
Cool.
Yep.
A lot of work, huh?
Oh yeah, yeah. It is hard work, but I was enjoying it because I enjoyed the audio editing and the music. And, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there was another talk radio component for you, which was Joyce Riley's Power Hour, and you had said that you found America Again through her program. But you must have also heard her talking about the cover up of the Gulf War illness and other topics that showed that our government was basically lying to the public. How did that affect your outlook on things?
Yeah, that was very important. So the way I found Joyce Riley, so at the time that the Tea Party and healthcare debates were happening, I decided to attend an event in Philadelphia, and Arlen Specter and Kathleen Sebelius were there trying to sell the healthcare bill.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just a dramatic event. Because the news didn't show everything that happened in there. So
mm-hmm.
you had the conservatives and the liberals, and it was so polarized. So every sentence, there was either loud cheers or boos, and the other side reacting. So
mm-hmm.
it was an event. And what they did on the news, they made the Tea Party people look like crazy old people stuck in their old beliefs. It was just
mm-hmm.
totally spun. But they were really seriously angry, really fighting at the
mm-hmm.
time. So at that event, afterwards I met some conservatives who had some strong viewpoints, and I was talking with them for a while, and they actually made a lot of sense. They were saying, hey, health insurance is about risk management. You know,
mm-hmm.
The companies need to manage their risk. And,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you lose money, there's no point, right?
Yeah, right. And then one of them gave me a DVD of Joyce Riley's Beyond Treason. So I took it home and I watched it, and it made me sick. Because the truth is really horrible. The fact that we use depleted uranium weapons, and that Iraqi children were being born with severe birth defects. And it's just amazing that Joyce found out all about that. So I then found Joyce's show on the shortwave radio, and I was listening to it. And she was just a loving voice. She cared about the people, and she didn't take any crap, and she introduced some amazing guests, and it opened up my mind. And she
mm-hmm.
had credibility because she had been a nurse in the military, and I valued her experience.
Right, right.
Yep.
Yeah, very real person, very authentic, you know. So
yes.
what was the Power Hour connection to America Again?
Okay, so in early 2016, David Zuniga made his first appearance on the Power Hour, and Joyce was so enthusiastic about him and the material, so she said something, I'll paraphrase here, it's like, if you people don't read David's book and join America Again, then I'm just going to throw this microphone out the window.
That's quite an endorsement.
Yeah, right. So she said, David has real solutions, a plan like nothing else I've ever seen. So all you have to read his book, listen to what he says, and you got to join America Again. That
mm-hmm.
was her ultimatum. So that was very intriguing. So I decided to download the book, Fear the People, and I started reading it, and I had never seen anything like it before.
Mm-hmm.
A plan, a solution.
Yeah, an actual solution.
Right, yeah, because I wasn't hearing solutions from Glenn Beck or the others. Yeah.
Right.
They had their events, and they got people together, but still not doing
much.
Right,
no plan.
Right. So it took me about 6 weeks to go through the book and for the ideas to sink into my mind. And then I just decided, you know, this plan, it's the best solution I had seen to restore America. So I decided to email David. And I had heard about another, well, I've been listening to another talk radio show, some guys who discussed the Constitution. So I recommended that he talk to these guys and see if he could get on their show. And he did. And he did an excellent discussion. So he introduced America again. And so, yeah, that was a good thing. And then I gradually became more involved in America again over time.
You said that you had played multiple roles in the evolution of America again. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So I was calling into the weekly Sunday night calls, and I connected with Matt Maida, and he was the technologist who was managing their website at the time. And what I had noticed, I was trying to find audio recordings of David's interviews. They were all over the internet. There was like a Mike Church and his Alex Jones appearance, and I felt it was just scattered all over the place. So what I did was I offered to help him organize them and to start archiving his Sunday night calls. So I worked with Matt, and then I was able to store the recordings on his server and link them into the website. And David taught me a lot about that. He taught me how to make sure there's branding and keep it very simple and get a very simple title with no more than seven words in it. And then, yeah, and then editing the recordings, cutting out the pauses and things like that. And all these archives are still available. So anybody can go on tacticalcivics.com and go all the way back to 2016 and hear the early days of it.
So,
a little more. So David then made some guest appearances on internet radio shows, and I was able to download and save all those. And then we have a LibertyCast library where several people did short talks about specific topics, so that's on Tactical Civics. And then America, again, was developing a new website, getting off a Nation Builder platform, so into a WordPress, and they had web developers that Joyce Riley recommended, and we worked with them. So I was reviewing what they built, and I learned about WordPress. And then David started forming Tactical Civics, and he needed a website for Tactical Civics. So at that point, I had learned enough about WordPress, and I helped put together a website, and we worked together, and then linked it to America again. So I built the current Tactical Civics website. And then we had some problems with the hosting company, and I had to know what to do to migrate it to our current host. So I was basically in the right place at the right time. And then I also did some research, sharing some articles I found with David. And I did my own research into the original First Amendment, just so I could understand it. And then one of the principles of Tactical Civics is the indictment engine. And that's a complicated application. I started thinking about how that might work. And David, he wanted me to help him with that. So I was researching some technical articles, and I shared it with David. Because he really has a vision there of using text processing to come up with evidence that might indict a legislator. So with Tactical Civics, David needed to outline, like, okay, if we're going to develop this indictment engine, how many people do we need, and how much is it going to cost? So I helped him figure out, like, a staffing plan that he could present for developing the first phase of the indictment engine. I mean, it's going to be a big project.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, yeah, it's possible. It can be done once we get funding.
Mm-hmm. Well, that actually is very impressive to me that you were a key player on the Tactical Civics website, because when I first found Tactical Civics and I went to the website, it was like, wow, this is really, you know, these people have their act together. This is a great website. So congratulations for whatever your part in that was.
Yeah, well, so, David has a lot of credit with the graphics and the vision of how it should be laid out. I did the technical tasks of getting it up and running.
Mm-hmm. Well, you did a great job.
Thank you.
So now you're now involved with the new Our First Right website, which is just getting underway. Tell me what you like to see happen there.
Okay, so Our First Right, it's a very compelling vision of what Americans can accomplish, and it's very simple in principle.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the first step that has to happen to reverse the mess we're in and retake our power. We're the highest level of government. We're responsible for this. And the mission belongs to all the American people. It's not just conservatives. So this website, it has to be an open tent. That's a phrase you hear in politics. Everybody come under the open tent. McCain tried to do that. So I don't want to use those words, but that's what it has to be. Everybody has to feel welcome, and we all can work together, even if we have different views about the social issues. Yeah, we should all be able to work together. So what I want to see is something that is very different than all the other bloated websites that you see out there.
Mm-hmm.
I really want it to be very simple, and it's going to take work to simplify it so we could all focus, and that the one mission we have is ratification.
Right.
And we have to make it easy enough for a seven-year-old to understand it. That's the challenge.
That's right.
Once we get it up, we can't tolerate any trolls or people who want to ride for their own brand. So we have to have rules that are very clear, and the discussions have to be moderated, and we have to be respectful. If people go off topic, we have to reply respectfully. So there will be some kind of forum in there, but we have to really be ready to moderate that. And then as it grows, I want the website to be a home base where people can go to get information about what's happening in each state capital, and you should see progress over time, what's happening in each state.
Right.
And then the state coordinators should be able to manage those areas of the site and keep the information relevant and timely, so periodically updating their status.
Mm-hmm.
And then the site will also be an education tool. So I wanted people to be able to get bite-sized chunks of information and that they could digest, because it takes time to learn this. So little bit at a time, and at your own pace, you could learn this. So all of us are going to have to be actively managing this site with some guidance from an administrator who knows how to make it work. But we all have to keep giving feedback so we can get the site the way we want it.
Right.
So it has to be a platform that allows for communication, and then it needs to be able to scale to become that home base for every flyover town.
So
they can clearly see the vision that their voice is going to be heard for the first time, and they're going to supervise their representatives and make them accountable to the will of the people.
Right.
Yeah, so at this time, I'd like people on this call to talk about any ideas they have for the new website and any other questions you may have.
Okay, thank you so much, Eric. This has been great, and I would like to invite anybody who has questions, comments, input, come on in.
I'll speak up.
Okay.
Bill Hoses from Kansas.
Hi, Bill.
Hey, Eric. I know that you and I have not talked a lot. I want you to know that I've been speaking about you a little bit.
Oh, boy.
Recently.
Okay.
And I'm starting at zero from where you're at.
Mm-hmm.
With website and all that kind of knowledge. I can barely dial a telephone. That's about as technology smart as I can claim to be. But everything you've just said about the website, I've shared a lot of that same vision with a guy named Joe Sager, who is a website design guy. Comes highly recommended to me. I've got absolute, complete confidence, faith, and trust in him because of where he came to me from. And I thank you and he and Jen and Dixie. That's the team I've assembled. Will work really well with Joe. And I think you have some special vision. It's almost like you and I are running a movie, and I don't know anything about websites. But we have similar vision on what we'd like to see on one. And I've shared some of this with Joe. And there's an outfit down in Houston, Texas, that he brought up to me, and I said, hey, you know what? That sounds good to me. We're just going to go with it. And it's a host. And I don't know what that means exactly, but you do. And so I'm gonna ask you, this host is going to cost us $72 a year.
Mm-hmm.
Is that reasonable?
Yeah, for storing our files.
It's a secure host,
sure.
Whatever that means.
Yeah, there's always a secure encrypted connection. Yeah, we'll compare it to what we're currently using, and we actually are trying to save money on what we're currently paying, so that's a great idea. And see, my website experience, it comes from the early start of websites back in 1995, where I learned how to do it, and I made what made sense to me. Clear communication, simple, but the market has evolved into this crazy pop-up circus, you know. That's what you see out there now. And, so I want to just get the best balance. Because, I mean, you know, see, there's a lot of manipulation out there with these marketers for services. They say, like, for search engines, you need to have all this stuff to attract people, and even like your marketing on Facebook and Twitter. The question is, do you really get the people you want from the keywords? And websites have to be actively managed. Like definitely for search engines, you want to get the right keywords in there. But beyond that, there's social media marketing, but you got to do it strategically. So I say combine the strategic planning with the website development.
I'm going to rely on you.
Yep.
To walk that kind of knowledge down. I'm not supposed to keep track of anything.
Yeah, Jen will help us with the social media part of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's buddy.
Yeah, you got a winning team.
I think I do. In the world, I come up with such wonderful people that are so wonderful.
Yeah, you're breaking up there a bit, Bill.
Don't ask how I come up with this group of smart people. It was just the cards dealt me, and I could pursue dealing, so to speak. But it'd just be a gift. But I think I got the right.
Yes, thank you. You know, if you think about what George Washington went through, there were times when it was desperate, and like there were battles where he could have gotten shot, but the bullets bounced off of him somehow. But you know, there's the hand of God in all of this.
Mm-hmm.
Remember
that. Exactly right. That's right.
Absolutely. Well, I don't know this. Some things I do know, other things I don't, but I know somebody that does know. And I haven't quite asked him this question, but maybe fear is keeping me from it. Maybe one day I will. I just kind of live my life like God's leading my horse. And the only task I have is to maintain it's on the saddle.
Yeah.
And wherever he's me, that's where I'm going.
Yeah,
so
the inspiration comes when you'd least expect it.
Yeah. And I've been inspired here recently, thanks to Dixie. And I got a little inspiration from Mr. Zuniga last night.
Mm-hmm.
And I needed that. And so, you know, I say timing is everything. I think it all happened in a timely way for me. And I don't know if Joe Sager is on the call tonight, but I did invite him in. But he has another call that he's on Monday nights that it's a bunch of fellows like yourself, Eric. I'm going to call them realists. Some people call them conservatives.
Right. Yeah, that's what it is. It's reality.
I'm going to start referring to conservatives as realists.
That's a good one. Yeah, actually, I'm looking at some writings of Ayn Rand recently, and it's making sense to me.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I think of Atlas Shrugged so many times. Now, when I was reading it, it seemed like it went on forever. It was like drip, 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 you know. Mm-hmm. But that's the reality of it. You know, it doesn't happen in one day. It's just, you know, one little piece after another. And when you look at these people, you know, like I call him Wadler, but it's really Nadler. You know, he's like something right out of the book, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, a fat little waddling guy with no talent who thinks he's a big deal.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway,
hopefully
so
we'll
is
have
it,
a happier ending.
No, you know, right, exactly. So anybody else have any input on the website, what you would like to see there, or what you would, you know, any ideas for components or that kind of thing?
Yeah, Dixie, Daniel New here in Texas.
Hey there, Daniel. Nice to have you on the call.
Thank you. I have long wanted to see a feature that is on the front page, first screen, above the fold, as they say, that says, sign me up.
Yeah.
Send me your free newsletter.
Okay.
It needs to be free, and it needs to be easy, and it needs to be visible as soon as they land on the front page.
Okay.
And it can be a big red button, or it can be a box. I don't care what it looks like. But the point is that we would probably have 1,000 or more people on that mailing list already if that website had that feature. But because it was some Pakistani, I don't know, some foreign deal that used a template, we couldn't work with it without redoing the whole thing. So when we redo it, and when we are managing it ourselves here in the States, hopefully we can put that as one of the first features. That's one of the most important things you can do on a website.
Yeah, you're right.
And do you think
that
that needs to be a paper, something mailed to them, or can it be an email?
No. It should be we should be sending out some kind of a weekly newsletter electronically through email or through, I mean, if you want to send a paper, hard paper, when you do that for people who are sending you cash money and covering postage, otherwise, no.
Okay.
And we're not there yet.
Right.
I mean, when we have 1,000 people sending us, you know, $60 a year, well, then we can afford postage to send a newsletter.
Right. Okay. Just checking that.
Yeah, I'll just mention
if I may,
that. I just want to comment. America, again, did try that for a while. David's books were, like, you'd send your email and you'd get a PDF of his book.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, it was nice. So we got a few hundred emails, but there has to be follow-up to get them to, someone has to make contact with these people and talk about what they're interested in and what they think this organization's about, and then teach them a little. Yeah,
mm-hmm. You have to really engage.
So I think once we get a newsletter, regular momentum on a newsletter, then, we could add that, sure. We'll see. I mean, it's not an issue to add anything like that later. So.
Well, I'd like to
somebody who reads your page and says, that looks interesting, and they sign me up. Now, we may or may not be ready to have an editor and a regular weekly blog or newsletter, but even so, every one of those names is like a little dry chip piece of wood or a leaf. They're all flammable when we find the right spark. We need volume. We need volume. The 300 that David has is more than we've got now.
Right.
And we don't need 300. We need 30,000. You know, I'm serious. I mean, if you don't have 10,000 names on a mailing list, you know, and out of those 10,000, you don't expect more than a 1 or 2 or 3% to be real active. But you've got to have the volume. And when you suddenly, someday, you hit the nerve, boom, it ignites. And all of the material is there. The combustible material is there in those names and email addresses. And, you know, whether it's a letter writing campaign or you know, whether you're going to burn down the Capitol building, I don't know. But, you know, I'm just saying that when you find the issue, in the meantime, you've got to be gathering names first. That's the first order of the progression.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep. Yeah, so what we did with when Tactical Civics first started, we did an email drip campaign. So that means that, like, every week, the people who requested something, that they get an email, and Mike Routon was doing it. It was a personalized email that gave them something to read and invited them to continue the conversation. So, yeah, I mean, all these things are possible. MailChimp is the service that we've been looking at. There's another one called Constant Contact, which may be more expensive. But,
yeah, I think MailChimp just bought Constant Contact, actually.
Oh, really? Okay.
I think so, yep.
Yep.
Well, yeah, I want to share a few thoughts right up front. We've got something completely different. Now, Eric, I'm going to ask you to go back to one of those trips you had in the car listening to that realism radio.
Yep.
Because this is absolutely real. This is George by gum Washington. This ain't some other website. This is George by gum Washington. And folks are going to listen to George.
Yeah, tell us about your idea for a horse riding across the page.
Well, yeah, but, you know, that's just a small vision. I'm talking about George by gum Washington's running this show.
Yeah, well, we got to get that actor to, you know, we have to get the message first and get the actor to record it, and then we can put it on the page.
Yeah, well, you know what, somewhere. George by gum Washington, his name is enough for me.
Yep.
Well, and I think that's true for older people, but I don't know what the kids in school are learning these days. Do they know about the barefoot men at Valley Forge? You know, do they know what the forefathers went through to secure liberty for us? You know, do they have any idea? I don't know. I don't know what they're teaching.
Learning.
They're going to learn all that stuff when they go to our website.
You know what they're teaching them? Howard Zinn. Yeah.
But all that stuff is the minutia that they've used to bedazzle generations. What the children really need to be hearing about is the struggles of the mom and pops out there. You know, what the real American story was during that whole struggle.
Mm-hmm.
Get off the figureheads. Get off the people that they focus on. I got a couple of questions here. One request to the website.
Yeah.
Definitely a donate button.
Oh, yeah, we have that.
Oh, yeah.
But the other thing is on the newsletter, now, can that just be like encourage the members to do like editorials or you know, a letter to the editor? Kind of
well,
thing?
We definitely need writers for that. We need people to submit articles,
absolutely.
You know, because to actually put something out every week. Is a lot of work, you know, it's a lot of material that you have to have, you know, and it doesn't have to be a huge, big thing, you know, like the equivalent of two sides of an 8.5 by 11 sheet, you know, is enough, but you still, you know, you need material, you need people, you know, sending you stuff.
Actively, making these pieces. But like, I think it's Daniel News real fond of beat the elephant a little bit at a time.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. The one person, you know, I looked at it for a while when I think it first came up when we started the OFR. And I was like, yeah, well, I might be able to do one or two if I can get pen to paper. But my gosh.
Well, you
coming
know,
up
with
something every week's tough.
There's
go
a,
ahead,
lot of material, a lot of material already out there, so we don't have to reinvent the wheel. You know, on those lean weeks when somebody doesn't put pen to paper, we can just run something from 50 years ago or 100 years ago that's relevant to today.
Also, if I may inject here, a newsletter can have more than one department. You can have a feature article
right.
or two, and you can also have correspondence project of the week. Imagine if you had four state coordinators who were working, and each one of them was looking for some correspondence. Let's just say someone in Oklahoma, Kansas, you know, South Dakota, imagine. And then each one gives us, so once a month, one of those state coordinators could say, here's the five guys I'd like for you guys to write to this week.
Mm-hmm.
Next week, it'd be another guy. So that's a feature that takes up half a page in your newsletter. And it's something that if we're going to be effective and write letters, folks, we're going to have to be informed about who those guys are that we're writing to.
Right.
Why
right, and that would be a good thing. You know, this is who he is. This is what committees he serves on, and maybe what bills he, you know, and obviously not all of them, but, you know, highlights, like, you know, introduce you to the guy you're asking people to write to.
Yeah, I'd like to know what high schools they went to. And I'll
you can look that up, Bill.
Do you want to know why I'd like to know what high schools they went to?
No.
Every high school has a mascot.
Uh-huh.
Every high schooler that graduates kind of identifies with that mascot.
Uh-huh.
So you say, hey, you were a lion, weren't you? Well, they'll know right what you're talking about without even telling them.
Uh-huh. Okay.
How did you know? How did you know I was a lion?
I did my homework.
Or whatever the case may be. Maybe they were kitty cats or, you know, whatever their mascot was.
Right, right.
That'll put a smile on their face.
Mm-hmm.
Because it'll take them back to when they were a high schooler. Which may be good or bad. I'm not here to decide on that. But you kind of can sense what I'm getting at.
Right.
Dixie, right. If I may.
Absolutely.
What I'd like to see on our website is an interactive map that shows the states that we have active and our state coordinators. And when you click on that map on those states, you know, that it'll obviously be highlighted. These are the states that are active. And when you click on that, it'll show you who that state coordinator is and maybe even give you, like, a drop-down menu of the representatives that they want you or trying to encourage you to contact. That way
that's
people
a good
can
idea.
Go and click on that date and go, oh, hey, here are the names right here of the people I can write.
That's a great idea, you know, Aaron, because then as the states light up, as we get more coordinators, you know, it's that visual progress.
Right, exactly. And it makes it, when it's interactive like that for folks, they don't have to go looking everywhere for that information. It just one-stop shop, click right there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you feel about it, Daniel, but I that popped into my head, and I've been thinking about how Eric had helped David develop that interactive map for America Again in Tactical Civics. And I kind of like that, the idea of that for us as well, only we can really embed more information for people to find right there in that map.
Yeah, sure, that's
right.
Doable.
Mm-hmm. Can they do that, Eric?
Map. Yeah, the map can link to a page on the site, and that page can be dynamic.
That would be great. That would work.
And I'd also like to see the responses that you get to these form letters. how they respond to you.
Mm-hmm. If they respond to you.
If they do. Yeah, how long? Yeah, we're going to have to really track that. When you sent the letter, when they followed up with you, keeping that data. Mm-hmm.
Did somebody call them on the phone and have a conversation with them, et cetera? Yeah, all. And I don't know what this even means, but I'd like to see a PDQ button on there. Maybe that kind of dates my age a little bit, but back in my day, PDQ meant something. Maybe it doesn't mean nothing anymore. I don't know.
It was a really good chocolate drink on the cold morning.
Well, it was like pretty darn quick, right? But how, I'm
pretty
not
darn
sure
quick,
how that...
Yeah.
That's what that PDQ button means.
Yeah, but the PDQ, the drink came out after the PDQ, long after. Dixie, if I may.
It's a chicken.
Yeah.
I never heard of that drink in my life.
Dixie, to kind of piggyback on what Aaron was talking about with the identification of the states, click on the state, see who this coordinator is.
Mm-hmm.
Could we carry it one or two steps further and also have a list of members in that state?
You know, I'm a little concerned. I guess if we get consent, you know, but I would be leery of putting people's names out there without their consent.
Yeah, a lot of people don't like having their name.
Right.
Yeah, you'd need a really private area for that, and there's issues of collecting data from people these days, so you got to be careful. But the state coordinators should keep their private lists of members. And, yeah, there are services for keeping that information encrypted. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
What we could offer is, you know, how many members are in that particular state as opposed to their particular state.
There you go. That's a good idea.
If they want to know who those people are, who those members are, then we put them in touch with the state coordinator, and the state coordinator can put them in touch with the individual, you know, in a more discreet manner.
Yeah, I mean, we also want to be careful about that because we've had people always inquiring, well, how many members do you have? How many members do you have? And they have different agendas, so.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Yeah, so we won't share that unless it becomes something relevant that makes sense to share. Yep.
Well, you know, I often say, you know, somebody asks me how many members you got, I often say, man, I got a bunch of them.
let them
define what a bunch is in their mind.
Right.
Go, Bill, go. y'all were talking about having the, I guess it would be like a messenger group message kind of thing. I'm thinking of like a logbook on what the activity has been in each state towards getting the ratification pushed forward, and everybody be able to just drop a note, you know, today, like they were saying, you know, I sent my letter out today, I'll be calling them here in a week, and then a week later you're going on such and such a date, I made a contact with the legislative aide to set up an appointment or whatever, something like that where people can see an ongoing list of activities.
Mm-hmm. Right, contact.
And just be like a messenger post where you can just scroll down through it and read through it.
Your phone
can do it.
I may be wrong. Correct me if I'm wrong, Eric, but I believe that we can set up our own private, like, message chat on our website, so folks can just, you know, privately chat on that on the website if you're a member. And that way, what we can do is we can share information, like, you know, Johnny was saying. Also, you know, it'd be for FAQs and sharing the, you know, updated information. It wouldn't be one of those ongoing chat things where everybody's chit-chatting. It would be for informational update, you know, purposes only. But I think we can do something like that, can't we, Eric?
Okay. So then you're talking about having members log into the WordPress site and having permissions and, so different groups. Now, we had tried... I'm trying to remember what it was called. With Tactical Civics, I think, yeah, we tried a service that had group chats and it worked to some extent, but there's problems that come up. So what I would prefer is to see aggregated numbers, like how many letters were sent to each representative and each month, and how many got responses, and how many representatives look like they're candidates to start working with us.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So maybe have a spreadsheet for your state coordinators to just periodically, maybe once a month, go through and check off their activity.
Yeah, it's possible for them to log in and enter their data, and then it goes on the site. Yep.
Right. It would make more sense having somebody that come in a position like that where they're wanting to get active to just worry about giving them all the permissions to get into the back office.
Yeah,
at the
yeah they could keep track of it any way that they want to, but then they just type it into the site, the aggregate numbers.
What's her name's term, decentralization, come to my mind when you said that, Eric?
What were you saying, Jim?
If you're looking for numbers, and size does matter, I'd make a suggestion to you, and we make it a little harsh on our website. We ask people to actually commit to something, and that keeps your numbers down. But if you make a statement, and you can do this, you can set this up on your site, and say, I agree, do you agree that this bringing the district down to smaller numbers would help whatever you want to say.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever you want to say in terms of promoting our first right.
Right.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but make a statement where they say, well, I can agree with it. And all they need to do is say, I agree. And that'll get you numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like
now,
a poll.
Yeah, but that'll get us numbers, but will it get us active numbers? And that's
well, again, what you're talking about is when you talk to somebody and they say, well, how many people are in your organization? If you've got 1,000 or 10,000 people that agree with what you're doing, you have immediate credibility. You don't have to say, well, you know, well, what do you think a large number is?
Right.
A bunch.
I can't help but laugh at the irony, because anymore nowadays it's your credibility lies in the amount of people and followers you have, as opposed to the kind of work you're doing and how effective you are.
Yep.
It's crazy.
That's the game you're playing.
Here we are.
That's the game you're in.
Yeah, we're still trying to do the morally right thing and get, you know, good, hardworking people on board to do things and not just build up a bunch of, you know, warm bodies. But, sometimes you have to play the game to get a little bit further down the road.
Everybody wants to belong. Everybody wants to belong. And, Eric, I want to put this out to you.
Sure.
For over 25 years, I was an executive recruiter, and I specialized in data processing.
Mm-hmm.
So you bring a warm spot in my heart.
Mm-hmm.
I want to ask you one question. You're 2K.
Yes.
Now I'm not a technician.
Okay.
I wasn't worried about year 2K because every one of the programmers I was dealing with, none of them were concerned. None of them were concerned.
Mm-hmm.
And it was crazy from 1999, from
yes.
January of 1999 to June of 1999. Again, I'm a recruiter. If I passed gas, I made money.
Yes.
It was incredible. I mean, I had programmers that went from $50,000 a year to $90,000 a year overnight.
Yeah, new COBOL, right.
Yeah. And then in June, and I've never seen this before, like a curtain come down.
Yes.
And I couldn't get anybody to hire any of my candidates. It was because of the budget. The budget's from January to June.
Yeah,
they had money.
Because they had to prove that they were compliant, and they had to do testing, and so like what I was involved in, every program was put into a database, and then they were assigned work orders for people to review the program and certify that it works for 2000, and then we had to do full testing. So that's a lot of work just to say, okay, we're ready for it, and then nothing much happened.
Is there another year coming up? Because if I remember correctly, there were. Go ahead.
2038, I believe, is the next
okay.
one. All right.
Okay.
That's just like a Unix overflow thing, people have been upgrading their systems, so it shouldn't be that big a deal.
Well, I had buddies that were buying water and food and. They thought the sky was going to fall.
That started the whole survivalist movement, yeah, back then.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. That was crazy.
Bring back memories.
Yeah. Yeah, nightmares.
The thing that correlates with me of the whole Y2K thing was the same thing that went down with the Mayan calendar in 2012.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right.
And people would actually try to get me into conversation on both those subjects. I said, well, guys, what happens when your watch hits 12 midnight? It goes to 12:01. Come on.
Right. Right.
You just got to be prepared. What I tell them, don't rely on your damn calculator or your computer to take care of your paperwork for you. Remember how to do your paperwork and we'll be fine.
Exactly.
Well, you now know? We're supposed to be listening to a 15-year-old tell us the world is going to end in 10 years, right? How dare
they
you?
They wouldn't know how to write out a receipt. Come on, count change is a thing of the past.
Yeah,
writing out a receipt would be ancient.
Well, look at what that 15-year-old did. Look how many people she mobilized to get into the streets around the world. Now,
yeah.
I looked at that, and I was wondering, what is going on? How did that happen? And
money.
Liberals
money.
Know all the social media tricks. And yeah, so she appealed to emotion. And,
mm-hmm.
And they so now the science is questionable, but yeah, it's been fed. Yeah, to all of us. So, and yeah, I mean, it makes sense to do reasonable things to save energy, but not to have environmentalists dictating how businesses should run or how you should what you have to do in your home.
Not having children tell you how to run
yeah.
the world, you know.
Yeah, right. Well, don't have children. Don't breathe. Yeah.
Well, you know, environmentalist needs to have input into the conversation because they're going to cover bases that the conservative or the spendies would tend to be, you know, the commercial interest.
Yeah, I was actually wondering how could you market our first right to people who are out in the streets protesting climate change? Maybe there are a few who would listen to us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, because we want to talk to sensible people who can understand. See, because they're out in the streets and they're protesting big government and corruption. So there is a link there.
And it's so contradictory, though, because they're protesting big government, but then they want the government to run the whole energy industry.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
well, what is that? What is
yeah,
that?
Can you teach
what
them?
What is that ancient saying? Want not, waste not, or something
yeah.
like that.
Waste not, want not. Yeah.
Waste not, want not.
That was
yeah.
Ben Franklin, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
or maybe that was the Bible.
You go all the way back to George Washington. They didn't waste nothing.
Right.
They were environmentalists.
Right.
Everything had a purpose.
Absolutely, and everything got repurposed. Nothing.
That's right.
That's right.
Wear it out. Right. Use it up. That's right.
Yeah, and the Indians
and
did that
too. And put it in the fireplace come winter when everybody's done using it.
Right.
Oh, you know, Bill. You mentioned that it was all about money, what drove that thing, the public relations and all the commercialism.
Oh, I guess.
But really,
millions spent on that.
Absolutely, but it more what it was public relations and the thought of convenience. In my mind, that's where I always landed, was that if they made it more convenient, that's where the people went. Didn't matter what it did to their service. They would go for the convenience. So it brought to my mind, especially over the last 10 years, oh my gosh, it's really starting to freak me out. I once heard Henry Kissinger make a comment in a speech about, I think it was the First World War, they were looking for a worldwide revolution of all the communists. Okay. But he said the reason it didn't happen was that the common people were not sophisticated enough.
Right. Well, that's just what
and
we're doing now, right?
I was so young. Yeah, I was so young I couldn't really hook it up because I always thought of sophistication as being something totally different than the word he was actually using, that he could. And it was more domiciled to the convenience, just having it right there at your fingertips. And someone else brings it to you, you know. You're
mm-hmm.
looking for that expert that'll tell you how to do it instead of just figuring it out on your own. So, well, that just came to mind when you brought that up about the commercial interest. I've run into a lot of people that are really starting to focus in on the banking industry leader collusion that's been
mm-hmm.
going on for so long.
Now, what I found interesting was Greta was actually trying to make these representatives accountable at the UN, and at she was that you have failed us. You didn't act, and that's exactly what we want in the future: is citizen activism, but in a way that we still have a republic, and that's where our 6,400 representatives will, yeah, they'll figure it out.
But, right.
Yeah, but think about that. That she got people out in the streets by, she was really encouraging that activism that we want, but not for what we want.
Yeah, that was all media-driven.
Yeah.
Yes, everybody's got their 15 all minutes of fame, driven. Right?
Hmm.
Yeah, it's very contrived, really. You know, when you think that she came over here on a ship, took her 2 weeks or something to get across the Atlantic, and then people were flying in jets back to Europe to... you know, on her behalf. So, you know, it's all the optics, as they say now. You know, it's going to look right. And it's, you know, I just think it's sad to be using children in this way, you know, because it's certainly not their ideas. It's, you know, it's what they've been fed, either by the schools or their parents or whatever.
I really believe that all this nonsense, because that's what I see it as, just plain old foolishness, nonsense, whatever word you want to use. But it's in the realm of those two words.
Mm-hmm.
It's all coming crashing down. That's why it seems just like it's so far out of control, because they can't control their idiocy, and they're starting to get outed, and they're starting to see it when they look in the mirror.
Yeah.
It's driving them crazy. But that's soon to end.
Well, I hope you're right. It would be nice if we could get back to some sanity here.
Well, I think what's going on with the impeachment is starting to show that it's starting to end, that they're being outed.
Yeah, I think there's some truth to that, you know. I mean, how many times, in fact, it was in the that Michael Ramirez who does the cartoons, he had one today with the donkey, and it said, impeach Trump because he's Trump, you know. And that's really what it's like, you know. Like, it doesn't matter what the reason is. We just got to get it done. And I think people are starting to see it and to, you know, I mean, certainly it's been going on since Bork. You know, they've been doing the character assassination the end justifies the means, and it's just loathsome.
Yes, but what has to happen is these mechanisms have to be exposed. That's the key. People have to see that they've been manipulated.
And I think they are seeing that now, where the media is so unbalanced.
Yeah, some people see that. Yeah.
Oh, I think a lot of them are seeing it.
A lot of people do. Yeah.
More and more every day.
Yeah.
I still think Trump did that on purpose. He set that whole thing in motion on purpose. And I have the heartfelt thought that when he met the Prime Minister again, I think in Los Angeles or someplace, he'd come to it face-to-face since the phone call. And I'd almost said, Donald Trump said, see, man, I told you that's just how it would go.
Well,
that's all they talked about. What was going to happen? He just called. Yeah, well, I'll let you know. This phone call is going to set this thing here off. I want to let you know. I'm on top of it. I'm going to practice this little exercise here, and show these people a few things.
Plain chat.
For the ones that are paying attention, they'll see it. They'll start rippling them out.
You know, In the meantime,
it's really hard. Hey, folks, in the meantime, it's really hard on the folks that are living right up against the edge of this, the Depression days. I mean, we are so freaking close to the Depression days. I can't believe it.
You know, I just...
How many people are homeless, actually, without a home?
Yeah, that's driven, too. That's not natural. There's somebody...
Absolutely, Bill Hosey. You're right on point there, buddy.
Somebody's been building that population intentionally, but I want to share a funny. I want to share a funny thought, and I'm going back over a decade. So this technology has really improved in the last 10 years, and I've got to believe that it's gotten really, really good. But imagine how funny it would be if that little girl were to step to a microphone to give some kind of a speech,
and you're sitting in the front row with some noise-canceling technology, and you just aimed it right at her and dialed it in, and nobody could hear anything she said.
How dare you? How dare you?
Hey, they can make a freight train go away that you can't even hear it standing 10 foot away from it.
Yeah.
Well, what you have to watch out for now these days is called deep fakes, where they can take a famous person and make them say anything they want them to say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they can do that too.
Yeah, that's happening. Yep. Yeah, these liberals, they know all the tricks of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't seen conservatives really fighting that much.
Well, you know, conservatives have lives to lead. You know, their own personal lives that they want to get along on, and they don't really necessarily want to run everybody else's life. So, you know.
Yeah, well, you know what? Everything you see with these attackers, this is nothing new. All this stuff is Saul Alinsky 101 stuff.
Yep.
They just keep recycling it.
Yeah.
And what's missing is the conversation going on at the dinner tables of the people involved in your injury process.
You're right. Well, there are no dinner tables.
Just them. The grand jury people cannot speak. I want to be very adamant about that. They have to be circumspect on their discussions inside that room. It has to stay completely confidential 100% of the time, or it fails. And it will quickly be exposed if it's operating correctly. If a grand jury is corrupted, it shows up pretty darn quick.
Mm-hmm.
But the people have to understand what's going on. That's why this base education is so important, why David's so adamant about trying to get it as concise and easily digestible as possible as you take in the information.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that's
really important. I wanted to let you know. Yeah, absolutely. Hey, everybody, well, we're running an hour and 15 minutes, so however much longer you want to go, Dixie, just say the word and I'll cut off the recording.
Yeah. Anybody have anything they want to put on the recording, or shall we cut the recording?
We can go ahead and cut it as soon as I say, hey, I love every one of you.
All right, you just got cut right off. Okay, John.
Well, we can always carry on the conversation, actually stop the recording. That would help encourage people to come into our calls, join the conversation, folks.
Right.
Thanks, everybody. We got some great ideas.
Exactly. All right. Well, I don't know if people want to continue to chat or we want to just wrap it up.
Well,